It's turning out to be pleasant. It's not nice. 90 degrees, Quag.
It's not 90. Let's the just humidity's lead off with high. That. The humidity's high, but it's not 90. Okay, it's like 75 and humid, which I'll take. Scott Sampson from Senhound is joining us right now. It's been some years since we had you on. It's been a while, it is a real pleasure. Your mustache is looking spectacular.
Thank you.
I got to say that. It's wonderful look.
2 years in growing, right?
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. That's right. Let's talk about Senhound. I know you've been trying to do this for a while.
Yes.
Where did the idea come from, and how did it grow into this?
Oh, man. Let me give the 90-second version of this.
You got some minutes, so take your time. You want to pace yourself. You can take it.
So I literally had a consultant reach out to me, and I deleted his email for like 2 weeks. And then Clemson people know Joe Turner. He was kind of my business mentor, and we actually went to coffee. And I said, listen, you know what I do at Clemson, what it takes in travel. You know what I do in real estate. You know, is this something I should even look into? Thinking he would just kind of nix it and I'd move on in life. And without hesitating, he said, absolutely, you should do this. And I was like, oh, all right. So then went down this journey and landed on Senhound in December of 2024. And then visited them in early 25, signed with them in February 25. And then as I learned more about Senhound and the model and things of that nature, I knew, you know, this would be a big life pivot for me. Your fundraiser for 15 years, and that's kind of your lane, that if I wanted to do this well, I needed to go 100% in. And so finished our year at Clemson in June 30th, and then in July I said, okay, I need to start transitioning, and made the decision to take the leap and go full-time into Senhound, and did that, and leased up the space here in Publix in November of 25. And then we started construction in April and started our pre-sales. And then had our soft opening 2 weeks ago with our members. And we've been serving dogs ever since. So here we are on our grand opening. And what's the clip? Or what do you call it? The Cliff Notes version of my story.
That's really cool. It's cool to see that vision sort of come to fruition. That's really neat. And then to see the community come out and support today has been really nice, too.
It really has. Honestly, with the rain, like y'all said, it rained the hardest when we had the ribbon cutting. And then we finished, and it stopped. But I had someone comment that as a local chamber member, this is one of the bigger ribbon cuttings they've seen recently, which is obviously great for me. I don't have anything to base it off on, but it's like, well, that's awesome because, you know, with the rain and stuff, you don't know what people are going to show up or not. But it was great. People were awesome. My staff is great. They're in there taking pictures. It was a really cool turnout, and to have some pizza from you guys and then cake and people excited to be here. A bunch of dogs showed up too, so been good.
What is it about the Senhound model that attracted you to them?
Honestly, it's a few things. One, it's the way that they focus on dogs. It's routine. So when you think about routine for us, brush teeth, take showers, things of that nature, the more I started learning about Senhound, it's the same for dogs. I mean, they need the same routine. And then the support that Senhound Corporate offers to get you up and to train and to set up the space and all that. And it just was like, you know what, that's a really good model. And the other thing that really got me was when I was learning more about Senhounds, other franchisees had been with other brands and we're coming to Senhound, and I'm like, all right, well, they have franchise experience. I do not, so let me ask them questions, because if they've had experience and they're coming here, that tells me something I need to pay attention to. And in the end, it's all lined up. I mean, the more I've learned in the last 2 years, it is routine. I mean, we had an example the other day where we had a dog with, what was it, with some matting, and we were able to explain to the pet parent how we can help with the matting and what we can do, but then what they can do at home. And the next visit, we'll focus on this. And eventually, two or three visits in, that dog won't have any mats anymore. And, you know, we get to educate. And obviously, people love their pets. I also learned in 2024, 90 million dogs are pets in the United States.
Wow.
And so here we are 2 years later. I'm sure that number has grown. But, I mean, you guys travel just like I do. I remember the first time in an airport I saw a dog in 2012, 13, 14. I was like, what in the world is this dog doing in here? But you fly today, you see a dog at every corner
an
airport. It's common.
Yeah. And they're sitting in seats like people.
Right. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, it's really become like family. And our phrase is dogs are family, or love a clean, healthy dog. But it becomes part of their family. And so our job at Sinhound is to keep your dog as healthy and clean and comfortable as long as we can so that they can be a part of your family as long as we can.
I'm a new dog owner. I know nothing about dogs, and I come to you. What is it that you offer? What do you tell me that I need to do?
So the first thing is focusing on that basic hygiene, which is what our premise is. So routinely we focus, and that's our hygiene package. It's $35 a month. But it focuses on the bath, the teeth brushing, the ear cleaning, the nail trim, and then we focus on the health check. So we check their skin, coat, ears, nails, teeth, and we give a report card so that we can keep up with that, because we want to help you as the pet parent notice something if it comes up, because you might not know to look for it. I know I didn't until I got educated here. And the biggest thing that is helpful with that is we try to make sure, A, we're convenient, we're affordable, and that we only want your dog to have services that your dog needs. We don't want to put everything on it and make you pay for something your dog doesn't need. So that's why our essential package at $35 a month includes those essential things that all dogs need. And then hopefully through the scent check, the report cards that we give every time you show up, when we can explain that and talk to you, you then become more educated. For example, in our wall, we have our knowledge wall. 90% of dogs will have some form of periodontal disease by age 2. Well, I didn't know that, but how can we help that outside of coming to see us? We have a dental chew, and we have a water additive. And if you do that routinely, it has been shown that for the small dogs, you can add up to 5 years of life because of dental health. The bigger dogs, up to 3 years. And so teaching people that so that they can then understand why we're doing what we're doing and how we can help them at home, we're literally trying to elongate your dog's life.
That's amazing stuff that they're doing here, visiting with Scott Sampson here on the program with Scent Hound. I'm curious, you talked about the scent check and some of the basics there.
Sure.
To me, that's one of the great calling cards of the business is, you know, you're not touting this, oh, we're going to do this like spa experience
right, where
your dog doesn't need it. It's not a spa treatment unless you want it to get that way.
Sure.
It is about, as you said, prolonging the life of the dog.
Right.
I'm curious, that feels like something that's unique to sort of thread that needle.
And so one of the things that we say that we are learning is we are considered a disruption to the industry because we focus on that full circle experience for the dog. So, yes, it's the basic hygiene that we've talked about, but then, yes, overall, we are focused on your dog's health, and we are able to provide all those things in one space. So it's the health and wellness. It's proactive. We want to be able to catch things before. And people say, well, are you vets? And we're like, no, but when we catch things, like we had a dog in Florida 2 weeks ago, came in, they noticed the dog was a little bit off in personality. And when they did the check, it was a loose tooth. Well, that's why it was hurting. So we can tag that tooth, goes to the pet parent in their report card. They can send that to the vet. The vet can find the exact tooth, went and extracted it the next day. And there you get it out. There's no more pain. There's no abscess. There's no infection. And so that's the whole thing that we're able to do is partner with parents so that the vets can do what they need to do when we find observations like that.
Very interesting stuff. Tamer from Seneca gets sent on our Adams Covering text line and says, what about older dogs with anxiety? Honestly, that's the one thing I think
sure, about.
Any place like this, I'm like, what if the dog is just bad at this? Like, what do you do? Because you're doing a lot, like, very intimate with the dog.
Well, we've already had those. And so, a lot of times the dog's in a brand new spot. And what is the only thing that dog knows when it goes in a place like this? I'm at a vet. I'm getting a shot. You're going to do something that I don't like. And so immediately they get tense or they have the separation anxiety from the parent. So one of the things we do is when that dog comes in, we make sure the dog is comfortable. And if we notice that there's going to be that case, and we have pet parents tell us you might have to muzzle the dog for the nails. The other aspect is we can say, hey, we have a hemp calming aid, and we'll, right here at retail, you can use that next time your dog comes in. Obviously, the thunderstorms, fireworks, things of that nature is what it also helps with. But then if it gets really bad and the dog's just really anxious, for whatever reason, it could be kennel, it could be other dogs, it could be separation, we also offer an express service. And it's literally the pet parent stays in the lobby, the dog goes in, it's a 15-minute service, you go straight to the tub for all the things, you come straight back out. And so it's minimal, typically the beginning of the day, the end of the day, so it has minimal interaction with other dogs. And then that way we can help those dogs that have that anxiety.
Do walk-ups by appointment? How should people reach out and sort of get involved with you guys on the front end?
Both. So we have appointment-based. Our app will be going live today where you can book an appointment. You can book a trial appointment. And then our quarter three promotion right now is if you join as a member, your first month is free. So basically, if someone comes in for what we call a trial visit, we offer the member price. That's how we do it. And if they come and we do the hygiene package that I've mentioned, they come to pick up, you're like, you know what, I enjoyed this, I think I want to join and become a member, then that visit will be free. And then moving forward, they're the $35 or whichever membership package they choose. But we had a lady on Saturday that brought her dog for the first time that morning, loved the experience, told her sister-in-law, because she had three dogs, sister-in-law dropped by at like 2 Saturday afternoon and signed up all three of her dogs on the spot. So the word of mouth, the four walls marketing of being able to, all right, we've promised this, but then my dog gets picked up and the follow-through is there. That's the best thing we can do, is to show that, hey, we're lining up with what we're saying, and then people are having a good experience, go tell their friends.
Man, that's great. I'm happy for you.
Thank
you. I'm excited for this to go well. Today has been a blast.
It's been good.
And you're serving it like it's not just ribbon cutting and stuff. Like, you got customers today.
We do.
I've seen them going in and out today.
Absolutely. We got pizza. We got cake.
And we have new pizza just arrived.
Yes, that's what we're talking about. Scott, thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure,
it.
My friend.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So much. Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Scott Sampson with Scenthound. Short break. We'll come back with some college football conversation when we return.
Speed on the bases, power at the plate, Gold Glove defense across the diamond. The Stars of Atlanta are ready to take the field.
Michael Harris going to sprint back, and he somehow makes the catch Willie Mays style and goes into the wall.
For every pitch from March to October, we are your home for Atlanta Braves baseball. Right here on The Roar, the Upstate Sports Authority, 105.5 and 97.5. The Roar, where every day is game day.
Thank you.
This hour brought to you in part by our friends at Tiger Diagnostics. TigerDiagnosticsLab.com, Dr. Ted Swan and his team actually reached out to me a couple days ago saying he appreciated the kind words that we say about him. The reality is they're just telling you the truth. We're telling you the truth about Tiger Diagnostics because what they do, they can draw your blood right here in the local area, and your blood sample stays here. Your blood work that you need to get done to get to the bottom of medical issues or just doing your normal labs, you can't deal with the turnaround time. My wife actually had a situation a few weeks ago where she was waiting on results from her blood work, and she did it through a big provider, and it just took forever, and like, medical anxiety takes over. You don't know what you don't know in that situation. And so Dr. Ted Swan and his team, what they do is they just take that completely out of the equation, where the efficiency of the turnaround times gets information to patients as quickly as possible. It also involves employing local people, which we love. Four locations in the upstate. They've got the local lab there in Piedmont, TigerDiagnosticsLab.com.
We make traffic a little more tolerable. The Upstate Sports Leader.
That's right.
The Roar.
And these dates are on the calendar, and they're coming. So prepare now. That's Scenthound will do that for you free of charge.
You know what? That's great.
I'm just going to add that.
They're not even going to make you sign up for the membership to do that, right?
That's a bonus right there. We're gonna let you know when Independence Day and New Year's Eve. We're going to let you know when those are. And know there's going to be people shooting fireworks off.
Talk to your pets. But we need like a the more you know. Talk to your dogs about New Year's Eve. Talk to your dogs about Labor Day weekend.
You know, and while your dog is home hiding under the bed, if you bring it to Scenthound, it's going to be clean and healthy.
Exactly.
It's
going
to be a clean and healthy dog under your bed hiding from the fireworks.
Might be scared of the fireworks, but that's the most of your concerns. Oh, yeah. Honestly, that should be the tagline. Really good. Really good stuff. We were talking about the Braves during the break. You feel better about the Braves? I mean, they got the nice win yesterday. A couple one-run wins the last two nights. Feeling a little better about where they stand right now?
I will feel better when they're healthier. But the way they were playing prior to the All-Star break, I expected them to be in a tie for first by now. And you know, part of this is the Phillies have decided to stink all of a sudden.
All their players are 38. They're all tired and broken down. Yeah.
Yeah. So the lead's up to 4.5 now. But, you know, it's there's ebbs and flows in every season. They're going to go on another hot streak. Hopefully the Braves do too. And, you know, this doesn't feel like maybe a hot streak as much as just Padres were not very – they were not very good. You told us that they were not very good. And
I'm so glad. Thank you for remembering. I appreciate the remembering that they're not very good.
Braves didn't play great, but they did what they win 3 out of 4. So we'll take it. I mean, we'll take it. And now we turn our speaking of anxiety, going to Baltimore.
And you know what? So Baltimore is the one team that I've seen in person this year. I watched the Reds play Baltimore on July the 5th. And can I tell you, Baltimore as a baseball team is more name than game. It is a lineup that's filled with familiar names and top prospects. Many of those familiar names and top prospects just are not producing. It's a wild situation where you're like, I should be afraid of this guy, but he's hitting 192 with 5 home runs.
A caller a few days ago mentioned that some teams just seem to have your number, though. And the Orioles feel like one of those teams that, at least recently, have sort of had the Braves' number. You're not lying. I mean, what you're saying is accurate about the Orioles. But they seem to play better when they are against Atlanta.
The Braves have lost 5 of the last 6 against Baltimore. That is true. Going back a couple years, the last time they went to Baltimore, they lost 2 out of 3 in 2024. It is interesting that basically none of the relevant people, like Craig Kimbrell, got a save for Baltimore in that series back in June of 24. Almost none of the relevant people on the pitching side are going to be involved in this series this weekend. The Orioles, as of this morning, had not made a decision about their starting pitcher tonight. They are going with Trevor Rogers, who has struggled a little against the Braves. He's given up some home runs. He's got a 4.44 ERA since 2022 against Atlanta. He did throw 6 2/3 shutout innings last year on July 6th in Atlanta against the Braves. It's the first time that he completed 6 innings against the Braves in his career. Grant Holmes for Atlanta, he threw 6 innings last year against Baltimore. If he does that, that'd be great. Grant Holmes hasn't completed 6 innings in a start since June the 3rd. So the one thing that I'm a little worried about with Atlanta in this series is just how much the bullpen has had to do and how much the bullpen is going to have to do because they haven't had an off day. Mm. They have not had a rest day. They've been throwing off. You got like, you know, your plan C closer running out there twice last week against the Padres, it seems. And so I'm a little worried about that. Baltimore has been better at home of late. They are 3 over .500 at home. The Braves have, you know, they're a normal team on. They're just a good team on the road. 28 and 22. We should also note that the Braves are 8 games over .500 against left-hand pitching. They've done a really good job this year against left-hand pitching.
Texter asking about Ronald Acuna Jr. He has not been activated yet. And Walt Weiss, I believe it was yesterday, said he expected him by the end of the weekend. So probably no Ronald Acuna tonight, but he could be there sometime over the weekend, I would imagine.
Did you see yesterday he caused a panic? He struck out and like limped back to the dugout after he struck out. Apparently he rolled his ankle, and he's going to be fine.
Oh, did
but
not.
It was like the middle of the game, and he rolled his ankle. I'm curious this because – and I said I was going to give you some good news, okay? I'm curious what Braves fans are thinking about their needs at the deadline because I'm having a hard time finding consensus. I think the consensus is – and I'm saying consensus because Alex Anthopoulos has talked about this – that they're looking at acquiring a starting pitcher. They're trying to get a starting pitcher of some caliber. There's going to be a decent amount of starting pitching on the market. It's just a matter of, do you want somebody that's a little more controllable? Do you want more of a back-of-the-rotation option? Do you want more of a frontline option? That sort of thing. I think the Braves need another bat because you're banking on Ronald Acuna coming back and being healthy, in my opinion. Austin Riley's hitting it better but still struggling. You've still had injury problems and maybe a lack of consistency at your catching position, so maybe you want to add a catcher.
Now, the last I saw on Murphy was that they were looking at August 1st for him.
Okay.
So, you know, you're a week away from having Sean Murphy and Ronald Acuña Jr. back, if that is still the case with him. I don't know. That I haven't checked recently.
I think Sean Murphy is not movable. In my opinion, the best-case scenario this year for Atlanta is to try to move Murphy.
Murphy is beginning a rehab assignment in Gwinnett tonight, actually.
So that's
promising.
All right, let me ask you this. What would you like for the Braves to do? Would you like for the Braves to get Murphy back, do something with Bart, maybe even trade Joey Bart?
You have an abundance of catchers right now.
Right.
So if he's back, you have too many.
And there are lots of teams, the White Sox, the Yankees, there are lots of teams who need the Angels. They need catchers. The Angels are reportedly, according to one thing I read, are looking for a young catcher. So you could probably trade Joey Bart for a bullpen arm or a fifth starter type guy for the Angels. The Yankees are looking for front line. So maybe you move Murphy there or see if you can move Murphy there. Because to me, maybe the best value is if you're a seller of a catcher, that may get you the best return of any position on the market right now.
Okay, well, I was going to ask you which one of these guys would bring the most. I mean, which one's the best trade bait, but do you want to go young or do you want to go old? I haven't given up on Murphy. I still like him, but his health has been a concern since day one in Atlanta. It has.
And see, that's why I say if you can find a team that is willing to take on all the remaining years of that deal, because you got to remember, a lot of the guys that are being flipped right now are on expirings or two-year contracts. Murphy, I need to remember, I don't recall exactly how long. It ain't a short contract, okay? They're on the hook for a while with Sean Murphy. His contract's fully guaranteed through 2028, so he's got two more full years at $15 million a year. You've got Drake Baldwin, who's going to be running up on arbitration at that time. You could go with Baldwin and Murphy and then just kind of wing it with your third catchers, you know, the Chadwick Tromps of the world or the Joey Barts of the world, and then keep trying to find it. Or you could say, you know what, for this year, Joey Bart is our backup catcher. That's our option, and we're going to try to move Sean Murphy. $15 million a year for the next two, taking that on with the injury history there, and maybe his year last year wasn't that great. That would be a risk for some team. But, again, in this market, if the Yankees are looking for a catcher option, their catchers are like 29th in baseball in OPS. So they're looking for a catcher option, maybe even a right-handed bat to go in their lineup as they're missing Aaron Judge. You might could coax a really good haul on the Yankees. And, you know, I would say maybe don't, because the Reds are trying to trade Tyler Stevenson. I'd like for Tyler Stevenson to get a nice prospect haul there. I actually think that's a way for the Braves to maybe trade big leaguer for big leaguer or to get some prospect capital that gives them more freedom to trade bigger when you're looking for an impact bat or a middle-of-the-rotation type guy.
The more I see Joey Bart, the more I like him, though. I don't know that he's certainly not going to be able to do for you, I don't think, offensively what Murphy is when he's healthy. Behind the plate, though, that guy's solid. I like the way he catches a game. And then, you know, there's this Drake Baldwin guy out there, too, that's pretty good.
Really good.
Pretty good at baseball.
And no matter what you do catching, Baldwin's going to catch more often than not. Or, you know, he's going to catch three in DH2 or catch four in DH1, whatever you want to do.
If I knew Murphy was healthy and was going to remain healthy, I think the Baldwin-Murphy where you can platoon them and DH them, to me, is what your lineup needs. I'm just a little gun shy right now with him. I am.
We may have a second because I'm just gonna tell you this right now. I'm looking at all of my catcher defensive metrics charts because the numbers for Joey Bart are not very good. But when I watch him catch, I am like you. I think Joey Bart does a really good job behind the plate. And his offensive numbers aren't great, but I'm not dissatisfied. If I'm a Braves fan, I'm not dissatisfied with what he's given you. There's also this one, and I love this one. The ABS leaders, okay? This is where, like, there are things like framing and blocking, and like you can grade all these catchers based on that. Ben, one of the things that I'm tracking a lot of the rumors for the Reds catcher Tyler Stevenson. He's like the best catcher in baseball at ABS challenges. He went 5 for 5 one game on ABS challenges. Like, he's unbelievable. So you have to take that stuff into account.
Yeah.
With catchers. So I'm trying to figure this out right now, like a number for his value with ABS and throwing runners out. He's a little below average. It's not terrible, but he's a little below average there. But some of the other stuff, the framing and the blocking and stuff, I think he grades out a little bit better, especially for a guy who just hasn't caught that many innings this year. It's not like he's been too terribly exposed. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to join us. 654-7627 on the Adams Goerfing text line, on the Pratt Energy Lawyers phone lines.
Can I issue you a stats challenge?
Yes. Hit me.
Oh, he's got the pen out, the
Hit
book
me.
Out. I want to know, you just mentioned the challenges. I want to know who is not only bad at recognition, but who's missing it by the most? Case in point, I guess it was in the Braves. It might have been another game, but it was recently, maybe Braves Padres. The other team challenged that something was a ball that was probably 5.5 inches inside the strike zone. I mean, it was, you know. I'm amazed at some of these challenges where it is 0.1 inch inside strike zone.
And you feel like you're like, ah, you idiot. It's like, well, it barely grazed the zone, pal. Like, well,
it's remarkable that that everybody involved, including the umpire, gets it. I mean, it has that kind of eye. But when somebody's a half a foot right down the middle. It wasn't a Braves Padres game because the Braves announcers they were trying their best not to laugh.
All right.
Who's the worst here?
All right. I'm going to give you, all right, batters. Let me see. I'm going to give you catchers. Oh, we got a Gamecock fan saying thank you. She listens all the time. That's awesome. Thank you very much. Let me see here. Are you talking about batters or catchers?
Anybody.
Okay. For batters, here's a bad one. Seidon Rafaela from the Red Sox is 6 for 21. 6 for 21. That is a 29% success rate. And 21 is among the highest batter challenges, okay? James Wood and Jazz Chisholm are both 4 for 17. That's 24%. I mean, there's a lot of people that say that basically say batters really shouldn't challenge. Like, unless you're good at it, you just shouldn't even challenge.
So who's the worst?
All right, the worst is, and I'm trying, like, you got a lot of these guys with, like, 1 or 2%. Let me see here. Somebody who's got, I'm going to give you the most challenge. Oh, Justin Crawford for Philly, 1 for 9. That's awful. Jorge Mateo from the Braves, 1 for 8. Also bad. I'm going to give you catchers, okay? Catchers. If you're below 50% as a catcher, you probably should go do something else. Christian Vasquez for Houston is below 50. Edgar Caro is below 50. Carter Jensen from Kansas City. Henry Davis from Pittsburgh is below 50. Let's see. Samuel Basalo, who's got many issues defensively, 44%. Austin Hedges, 49%.
These are a lot of guys that are not good at their job to begin with.
That's correct.
So
that's correct.
That kind of makes sense.
You know who's really good? And we'll go to break after this. Who's really good is Carson Kelly from the Cubs is 74%. 74%.
That's very good.
That's really, really good. He's challenged 47 times. You know who also was good? RIP? Sandy Leone, 16 for 22. Among the league leaders in ABS challenge percentage. So, and if you want, when we come back, I can give you team leaders as well, because
Of course you can.
In fact, before we get a break, I'll give you this one. The Braves as a team, as a batting team, are dead last in baseball at 34% as a batting team. Woof, that is terrible. Sam's Cleveland Guardians, 38%, and they need binoculars to find the Braves. Oh, that's bad. Now, from a catching standpoint, the Braves are ninth, 63%. Tied for eighth, actually, with the Colorado Rockies. So, basically, never, ever challenge on offense, Braves. But definitely use your catchers. They're doing a nice job. All right, short break. We'll come back. Seminole Ted is on hold. We'll get to him. 654 Roar is the number. We're live at Sinhound in Clemson. We still have cake and Papa John's pizza. Come out and see us. Hour two of the show continues next. Almost at the end of the movie, there will be like a 10-minute, like an Anchorman where they do the weird fight, or like Step Brothers. It's almost like there's a 10-minute scene that has nothing to do with the movie at all. They just decided to do a totally different thing almost at the very end. That's exactly what this song is. It's like a completely different song at the very end. It's like I'm not even sure I like this whole song because I really like the first part but not the last minute and a half or 2 minutes. I agree with you, Sam.
Eight and a half minutes.
Do you like
song.
The song? Is that a good song or did the end ruin it for you? I don't know.
It's a banger for me. It's a banger for me.
I think it's great. I think it's great. All right, 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to join. Do you have some breaking news?
Yeah, I'll give you a little
we'll go to the phones.
PGA update here at TPC Twin Cities. Number one, Lucas Glover and Scottie Scheffler both tied for 15th. Lucas is on a bit of a heater. He's had three or four tournaments in a row here where he's been – I want to say the last three tournaments were all top fives that he's played in maybe. So, regardless, he's on a great stretch. The story of the day, however, Michael Kim shoots a 59 today.
Woo!
He is, as best I can tell, it's the 16th round in PGA Tour history, sub-60. It's a par 71 course, but like Tiger Woods never shot 59. Shot 61, but never shot a 59.
How about that?
You see somebody shoot 59, you stop and take note. He had a 20. He shot 29 on the front nine. He birdied 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 9.
And then what a bum! He shot 30 on the back.
Yeah,
he couldn't break 30 on the back. You bum.
He shot a 69 yesterday and a 59 today.
And he's up by how many strokes?
He's only up three.
He's only up three. You shoot 59 and you're like, oh man, we're clear of the field. I can just screw around the next 36 holes. No, sir.
How would you like to be a guy that shoots 69 and you're 10 strokes behind the best round of the day?
Man, you're feeling great about yourself. You go back in the club. Hey, Michael. How'd you shoot today?
I could shoot 69 if they let me stop after 12.
You doggone right. Oh, man. That's funny.
That's good. Oh,
congrats to Michael Kim.
Before we go back to the phones here, Seminole Ted, I'm going to have to find it and tweet it out. I watched the best video podcast with Jack Nicklaus I think I've ever seen. In fact, I sent it to Mickey. Mm. And it was like probably some of those video podcasts, golfer guys, you know. They're just standing around talking to him. And, I mean, Jack is just so matter-of-fact about things. He doesn't brag. He doesn't talk about things unless you ask. But, you know, he's 100% believable. And talking about, you know, old technology, new technology, he pulls out his money clip. And it is a long drive champion. I want to say 1961, and it was a PGA sanctioned event. And he won the long drive contest at 341 yards with a persimmon wood.
What?
341 yards. And I mean, just the ball technology now is about a 50 yard difference. That's not even talking about club technology.
I was going to say, what would you hit now? It's like the prorated, like with inflation.
Yeah.
I want to know with inflation what Nicklaus would do now with that swing.
I mean, the ball just didn't compress the way then like it does now. That's, 341 in 1961, and it's, I mean, he's got the, he keeps the trophy in his pocket to prove it.
What are the odds that Bryson uses a persimmon wood in his next timeout? Just because Nicklaus broke one out.
The 3D printer will not print a persimmon. He actually he likes in this video he talked about Bryson. He's impressed by Bryson.
Okay, interesting.
He's impressed by his game.
Right.
How far he can hit it. But yeah, he had some really interesting things today to say. So talking about seeing Sam Snead and trying to replicate his swing and all kind of things. It was really good. Really good.
I look forward to listening to that. I like stuff like that. Let's go to the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. Seminole Ted joins us next. What's up, Ted?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, funny story. I learned to play golf with a set of Gary Player clubs that had persimmon. So I've actually hit persimmon woods before. And that was a fun set to try to learn to play golf on. So much easier.
My first set were that. Yeah, my first clubs were persimmon woods.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about ABS. And one thing that aggravates me to no end is the Braves do not do enough challenges. And what I mean by that is there are many nights where they don't use one or both of their challenges. You can't take them with you. Use it as a tool to get better. Use it as a tool to hold the umps more accountable. What are the chances of burning two before the seventh inning and then that one in the bottom of the eighth or the bottom of the ninth actually cost you the game? Whereas if you had taken that one, I mean, I see Matt Olson not use it a lot, you know, on balls that are outs or inside to him or low and sometimes high. I'd rather they not have any. And at least knowing that they're trying to change the outcome rather than to see them going home with two in the box.
You know, that's a great question.
They are conservative. You're right. They're very conservative.
I was looking at that, Ted. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks very much. It's a great question. The Braves are among the most conservative in baseball with number of challenges. And every organization, which is so fascinating, there's not that much data at the big league level. The one thing that I think we can measure is if you have a young catcher who's very good at ABS challenges in the minor leagues, that is a skill that you need. I read a book. Travis Sawtick, who used to cover Clemson for the Post and Courier, wrote a book on the Pittsburgh Pirates called Big Data Baseball. And it was among the market inefficiencies that they signed Russell Martin when the Pirates were making the playoffs in the early 2010s under Clint Hurdle was pitch framing. To me, ABS is the new pitch framing, where everybody wants a catcher that frames, but not every catcher sees the ball a fraction off the plate or a fraction on the plate the same. And so I do think that that's where you can try to get some efficiency, take advantage of some market inefficiency, is regarding the – if your catcher is excellent in ABS, I think it gives a lot of value. Like I say, there are lots of teams that need catchers right now, and that's something that I would look at. It's not something that you metrically sort of put on a chart with wins above replacement or all that. We don't know how to do that, but it is something that I would take into account. If you got a guy that's very high level in terms of framing balls and strikes, that allows you to be a little more aggressive. Every team has a different philosophy. It feels like the Braves' philosophy is don't blow these on offense. It's more efficient if you use them on the pitching side, and it also feels like they're going to use them late in counts. Now I don't know if there are numbers on that, but I feel like I see the Braves a lot, you know, defensively, a lot of two strike or maybe a 2-1 count. You're going to try to do that as you get closer to a decision in your at bat. You're not going to see a lot of first pitch challenges and things like that. It also could be because the Braves do have guys, and I'm not saying they're not defensive, but the guys that the Braves have right now catching are seen as bat-first catchers. So they may not be as comfortable with their eye behind the plate. They're also both young. I think having more years of experience looking at the game like that probably gives you a little better eye. So I think there are some reasons for it, but I agree, Ted. It's very frustrating. There's another thing on the Phillies real quick, and then we'll get to a couple texts here and get to our final hour. I was reading something about the Phillies today. 4.5 games the Phillies are behind the Braves right now. I've said that I'm still a little more worried about the Marlins. I think the Phillies, they're so old. I just think they're going to run out of gas. Those position players are going to run out of gas. They have had a tough stretch coming out of the break with road games against good teams. So we'll see if that continues. But the Phillies think, according to the thing I was reading in The Athletic from a couple days ago, they think their top-of-the-line rotation is very good. And it is. Christopher Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, Zach Wheeler's a very good 1-2-3. That probably if they add pitching, it'll be a bullpen arm to replace Brad Keller, maybe a bench piece, or maybe a back-end starting pitcher. Well, that tells me, and Dave Dombrowski is always going to use his prospects to go get somebody. He ain't calling guys up. He's going to use them to go get somebody. That's what he's there for. So I wouldn't put it past them to go and take a big swing at a Skubal or a Sonny Gray or somebody like that. But if they really believe in what they have in the top of their rotation, they're not going to mess with it in terms of a playoff series, then that's one competitor down for the Braves. If you try to get in the Tarik Skubal sweepstakes or the Sonny Gray sweepstakes or something like that, one of the fears is, we talked about the Dodgers getting them, one of the fears is that Dombrowski with the Phillies is going to go get one of these guys. But it feels like right now they're thinking about maybe adding around the edges as opposed to the meat and potatoes of their rotation, whereas the Braves really need some frontline starting pitching. I think that is an encouraging development in the trade deadline for the Braves within your division.
Yeah, one less quality competitor for those guys.
So we'll continue to monitor that. I'm a nerd about this. I love this time of year because
we know
this is what this is what makes or breaks playoff runs. It really is. All right, hour two is done. Hour three, you know, we have SEC order of finish. We should talk about that when we return.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.